Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my interview today is with Don Chimay. He's an actor, he's a writer, he's a producer, and he is starring in the new film, The David Dance, that's currently playing in New York City and is playing also, just been released in Toronto as well. I'm going to encourage you to get out and see the film. It's a relational, it's a highly relational and intimate film about a guy who is trying to, I guess you could say, it's about a radio show host that's trying to find his voice. And I think David and Don would both agree with me. Don and I talk about the autobiographical nature of writing. We talk about this as being a story that, you know, that has universal appeal, and how we all feel different and are really just trying to fit in. We're all just trying to, in some way, feel at home. And this is, again, about a person who is, I guess you could say, kind of standing on the outside in a way, and yet very much included. So I hope you get out to enjoy the film, and I think you're going to enjoy this interview as well with Don. And what's interesting, it was funny for me because I think at one point I actually referred to Don as David in the interview. And if you see the film or if you listen to the interview, I think you're going to understand why. DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my podcasting and speaking and writing. You can find the copy of Real Change is Incremental there. Also, rabble.ca for more of my podcasts, but also a whole host of others. So check those out there. And coming up, Don Chimay and the David Dance. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today who apparently, as I've just found out, is actually on location. Don Chimay is here with us today. Don, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little, define on location, Don. It sounds like you've just come out of a screening, a Q&A, fresh off the stage of a Q&A. Glad you could take the time. You're in the middle of a festival, aren't you?
No, we're not, actually. We're running here at our theatrical release in New York City of The David Dance, which is a film that I wrote, produced, and I star in. It's directed by April Winnie. And we're here in New York City at the Chelsea Sinopolis. It's 260 West 23rd Street, and we have 5 screenings all day from yesterday, which was Friday the 14th, October 14th, through October 20th. We have 5 screenings all day. And we're right here in Chelsea in New York City.
Nice. I'm sorry that we're not actually doing the podcast face to face. I wish I could join you for drinks after tonight's Q&A. So writer, director, producer, star. This story, this film really comes out of a play that you wrote a few years ago. Can you tell me a tiny bit about that genesis? And I really do want to. And actually, before we get into the genesis and the dialogue around the film, Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and just congratulate. How's the film being received even in these past few days?
Everybody really loves it. I mean, I knew that I wanted to write a story that had a universal appeal. You know, I mean it's about the universalness of how people feel different about themselves. I mean, so the main character in the story is gay. His name is David, and he's the host of this local radio show called Gay Talk. And his single sister asks him to be a father figure for this orphan that she's decided to adopt. And it's really about him overcoming his self-esteem issues in order to have the courage to have the full life that he's always dreamed of. And, you know, I mean, his self-esteem issues have sort of always gotten in the way. I mean, as the film progresses, we sort of understand the genesis and the root of those self-esteem issues.
And yet, what's interesting to me, I almost called you David. Sorry
about that. A lot of people do. It's okay. It's like I answer to both now.
You answer to both now is a funny response. So, Don, there's a sense in which, for me, I mean, you come out and speak about that universal appeal almost through metaphor and through, but it's really to me your I don't know, it's the tone. There's a melancholic tone to your character, to you, that really comes through in this film, that I think a lot of us kind of, I don't know if you'd agree with me on this, but I think a lot of us actually ignore.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like there's this fear, there's this, I mean, aren't we all in a sense kind of running from something?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us do. I mean, I think a lot of us hold back on our lives, and that may be because of self-esteem issues, it may be other things. I mean, but I think, you know, for me, it was always self-esteem, and I think that's something that comes up for artists a lot, you know, because, you know, you can be out of work times, and, you know, it's not a real super steady industry business, you know, and... It was always about self-esteem and how language, people's sort of reckless use of language can affect other people's self-esteem, and, you know, how important it is to be careful with language and how you use it, and is a big theme in the film as well.
It's a great, great phrase, the reckless use of language, the damage that we've done to others.
I think it's even more, become more prevalent. I mean, I wrote it as a play back in 2003. I mean, that was a while ago. It was originally at the New York International Fringe Festival. We did it at a small theater in Washington, D.C. in 2006, and friends told me that I should adapt it into a screenplay. So I started working with this other director in New York, and it turned out, I mean, he was originally supposed to direct it, and then we didn't have all our money and stuff together to do it at the time that we planned to do it, and he was going to move on to do an MFA program at Columbia. So I kind of raced around, and I found, I had an ad online, and April Winnie, who's directed several episodes of The Fosters, which is an ABC family drama, she responded to my ad, and she sent me a copy of her last film. I loved it, and I sent her a copy of the script. She almost immediately called me back, said she had read the script, and that she loved it, and that she was crying. And I kind of knew at that point that that I had found my director.
Right.
We met in New York and did a lot of collaboration and pre-production.
You say you found it was through Craigslist, was it not?
Well, that was one of the places that
a place. Okay.
But yeah, I pretty much was like, because we were sort of ready to go into production, and I didn't have a director in place, so that's
right,
pretty cool.
Right, yeah, kind of important, as producer, to have a director in place? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm old enough to poo-poo social media, and yet yesterday I met a woman through Twitter as a result of my podcast, and we have hit it off. She lives in the area. We are of kindred spirits, and we are working on similar initiatives, and the passion in the, it was just wonderful. And, you know, we met through social media. So it works. It does happen, you know?
It does. Yeah. I mean, we have a social media team for the film, and I was, it helps. It definitely does.
It absolutely does. I love the fact, the irony, it comes right out. Chris's character says it in the movie, you know, the irony of the radio show host who can't talk, who has a problem relating to people face to face, it seems, or maybe he just, it's not that he can't be bothered, but he's just, maybe, I don't know, tell me, has David realized, does he understand this idea about the damage that we can do through language, do you think, so that he holds back? Because to me, right out of the gate, the idea that, you know, just say something.
Right.
You know, a radio show host not able to express his feelings is pretty interesting premise for a film or for a story.
Well, I think the radio is his outlet. It's the only way that he can speak. I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, I've never hosted a radio show in real life. That was totally fiction that I made up on my behalf as a writer. But as an actor, I can relate being a very shy person in real life and being able to express yourself through a character, finding that voice either through another character and it gives you a permission to. If you can hide behind something, in David's case, he hides behind the microphone. If you think about it, I mean, people don't see his face. They don't necessarily know who he is. So in a way, he's hiding when he is speaking on the radio, but he is actually speaking his mind. So, I mean, even though he's a real shy person in real life, it's the radio that gives him the outlet. You know?
Well, and the ability, it seems, to speak truth into light into darkness almost, you know? Which I think is wonderful. I love the fact that he says, I think it's, he's talking to Kate. I think, I don't know if it's in the flashback or where it is, but, something about, you know, when I'm on the air, I have to be a different person because, but here, the best part is, Don, somebody might be listening and I'm actually getting a bit of a shiver at that because here's this guy who's got this care and concern for his listeners. Somebody might be listening. Somebody might need help. Maybe somebody needs some support, some encouragement, some affirmation. Yeah. But he's having trouble with his relationship with his family and with Chris. You know what I mean? It's really quite a, and I think on some level I think we all face that, as you say. It's
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he faces it in his own life and he knows that other people need it because he's faced it in his own life, you know? I mean,
so is the radio show a support mechanism for him, for David, but is it also in a way a support mechanism for others? It's a way to, you know, here is this guy who actually really does want to talk. He wants to create dialogue. He wants to have a conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, I think he does. He just doesn't know quite how to do it at first. I mean, usually he says at one point in the film, oh, you know, we're usually just about fluff. And, you know, he's hiding. He's still, even though he's out, he's out to his family. He's out in real life. He's still, there's this idea that he's still hiding and not really fully out, not fully really living his life because of these deep-rooted sort of ideas that he has really internalized about himself, you know, that, you know, he heard, you know, maybe, you know, if somebody hears the word faggot, I'm not even know if I'm allowed to say that on air, but I guess I just did.
You're totally allowed to, yeah.
You know, I mean, what that does to a person is, you know, in the long term, is really what the film is about, you know, I mean, he's unintentionally internalized those words that he's heard throughout his life, you know, and I think, you know, we have to be conscious about what we do say to other people, because what we do say does have an effect on them, you know, and that's what he's experiencing. We're experiencing how these words can have a long-term impact on a person and how they sort of, he doesn't want to admit it, he's not maybe fully aware of it until closer to the end, how they have impacted his self-esteem.
Well, and it seems to be, I mean, you certainly make allusions to it throughout some of the flashbacks, some of the things that happened in his childhood, but there's enough of a story there to me that implies there's a whole lot more going on than we actually get to see. You know, what actually did happen, you know, in the home? What did happen at school? Was there a physical abuse? Was there emotional abuse? I mean, how deep did some of this stuff run in order for this, you know, young man to wind up here? And it seems like he's spent a great deal of his life here. And I think I woke up with after seeing the film and really feeling empathy for David, and I think it's partially, on a certain level, I feel like we are kindred spirits in a sense, you know, having struggled with some of these issues myself, you know, the self-esteem, the insecurities, right? Just, maybe this time, maybe this is the time they're going to say they don't actually like what I do or what I've done. And I think this is what I meant earlier about how I think we're all in a sense kind of running from that to some degree. Some of us face it, you know, like you did in the film, and others don't.
Absolutely. I mean, I think like he has that conversation with June towards the end, and I don't think she's quite, I wanted to point, and June, by the way, she's the, for those who haven't seen the film listening, she's sort of a conservative radio host who...
Sort of conservative?
She's a conservative radio host who... she tries to convert young gays into conversion therapy, which is trying to change them from being gay into straight. Tries to point out the facts and tries to, you know, steer people away from that or just let them know that there is, you know, if they're, you know, not comfortable being gay or if they're just coming out or whatever, he tries to give them some information that they might be need. But anyway, she, I wanted to point up the similarities that they have, that they are both struggling with the same issues, actually. I mean, she, you know, feels like a freak herself, and David, you know, she feels the same way about herself that David feels about himself. They're both kind of damaged in some way, but
I think that's a great way to put it. They're both kind of damaged in some way. Yeah. I mean, she makes the accusation at one point, and I don't need to remind you, but she makes the accusation of saying, "You're not really whole, are you, David?"
Right.
And I mean, really, I mean, isn't it about her at that point shining the light into her own soul, into her own world? And saying, "This is I'm just as broken as you are," whatever that means. And I guess, you know what, David? Sorry, Don. What blows me away is how willing we are to, I don't know, separate, divide, you know, build walls instead of look for opportunities for, you know, to build those bridges. And I guess I'm going down the cynical road now,
I agree with you.
And I know that's what you're trying to do with the film, and you're saying we need to reach out, we need to embrace, we need to include. And I mean, are you in a different place today, having written the play, having you know, Q&As, writing the screenplay, going through the process? I understand there was some, some struggles making the film. So, you know, where are you today that you weren't, you know, are you more of a bridge builder today than you were when you first started this, you know, this writing project out?
I think I am. And I think when you begin that process of healing yourself, I know that sounds corny, but I mean, you know, and I think part of that healing was actually, for me, was actually making this film.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, just sort of like being able to put it out there and let people know, you know, in a healthy way, that this is something that I've experienced, and hopefully other people can gain something from it. Absolutely. You know, I've definitely have more confidence, you know, but I still, filmmaking is, the once the film is done, the struggles continue.
Absolutely. Hey, to what degree is this story about, obviously it's about the future and it's about what's next and so on, but it's really about, don't you at some point in the film, I'm just quickly scanning my notes here, you talk about, geez, I wonder, and because I don't live too far away from Buffalo, and I know Buffalo fairly well, you said...
Where are you?
I live in Toronto, so not...
Oh, right, yeah, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so you said, I wonder what my life would have been like if, correct me here if I'm wrong, if I'd stayed in Buffalo. And I heard the line, and I kind of laughed out loud, and I said, oh, well, it would have been worse, for sure.
Yeah, Buffalo's, I don't want to say anything. It's
That's
kinda,
right.
I would say I enjoyed my time, and I enjoy going back. My parents still live there, and there's a lot of really great things to be said about Buffalo too. So.
But I wonder metaphorically, what you were actually. I don't know how conscious or how intentional that was, but
absolutely no, it was very intentional. I felt from this character's perspective. Where he was, it was supposed to be very, where he was starting from, where he starts from in the film is very cold and barren, and where he ends up, he takes this journey, he ends up in a very, not only metaphorically, but in a very warm place, and that was very intentional, that he would go on this, I knew he had to go on, he was going on a mental journey, but he was also going on an actual, I wanted the audience to see him go on an actual physical journey where he ends up at the end of the film, too, as well. So he got, where we see him at the beginning, he's the weather of the city sort of reflects where he is in his heart. He's sort of cold and kind of empty and kind of shut down. And as the film progresses, we see how he grows and how the memories that he have actually inform him about his past and help him get through the present and the future.
The line or the scene, I think it's near the end of the film, and nothing worse than being gay and afraid of not fitting in. And I would almost say that it's almost, there's nothing worse than just not fitting in. And I think back to your earlier comment to kind of come back full circle, this really is a universal story in a sense. It's connected to broken relationships. It's connected to bullying. It's connected to so many things. And I think following up from that, and I'm going somewhere with this, trust me on this, but welcome to the wonderful world of who you really are, says your character. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I keep, I'm going to say it a third time. I think a lot of us are running from who we really are. And we're trying to medicate, in one way or another. And so, and what I love, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but what I love is, wholeness or healing, whatever that means, small H or capital H, either way, is to be found in others. It's to be found in community. It's to be found in family. I mean, that's what I took away.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, he becomes whole when he creates his family again after he's lost part of it. He becomes a whole person again. And it's one of the important things that he discovers is that his problem that he has is this feeling of sort of being different. It's not unique to being gay. It's everybody's problem. Everybody feels it. And you're right. We shouldn't be medicating ourselves in other ways. I mean, we should be, this is part of the human experience, and we have to take the good with the bad. We have to embrace the grief in our lives and the confusion. And I think you're right. I mean, a lot of us don't want to deal with it or acknowledge that something's really happening. So, and we have, drug companies telling us that we should be taking something for it to make it feel all better. And that's not always the case. I mean,
Absolutely. And I think forms, medication can come in a variety of forms, right? It's not necessarily a
prescribed at a pharmacy or purchased at a liquor store. You know, you can you can medicate in so many different ways. Well, listen, I congratulations again on
thank you.
Oh, and I have to say, my I mean, you know, obviously had favorite moments throughout your film, as with any sort of story or film that I watch. But probably my favorite is the gift of the Etch-a-Sketch, and and we'll leave it there. So for people who haven't seen the film or have seen the film or smiling right now, but for those who haven't, perhaps that will be one extra you know, inkling to get out there and to see the film. Sure. So what is next? So it's the just to be clear too, for those of you who are interested in more, tell us more too, Don, but it's the daviddance.com is the website. You'll find out more there about the filmmakers, about April Winnie, the director, and what's going on with the film and what's gone on with the film. What's next for you guys with the film, Don?
Toronto. We're going to be playing at the Carlton Cinema.
Awesome.
We open Friday, which is, I think, the 20th or the 21st.
So basically next weekend. So we're
going
to, that's fantastic. And how long are you in town for?
A week, same. We'll be playing a whole week there as well.
Oh, wonderful. Well, who knows? Maybe we'll get an opportunity actually to meet face-to-face.
Yeah, no, I would love that. Thank you.
So thanks again for your time, Don. I really appreciate it. I wish you well with the next few screenings and the Q&As coming up. And again, for reminding us all that this idea that feeling different it really is universal, and there is hope, you know, to be had in tomorrow.
Thank you, David.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.